know you came here to say. If you afraid, then come on with me. And I know what you came here to do. Knock, knock, let me see you get loose. It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. The final CBD of the week. We'll be off for the holidays. No Matt Wilhelm. He's on a Disney cruise with his family, having a great time. But you know who's here for the whole 2 hours? Da'Kid. What's up, Da'Kid?
I'm doing well. Tumultuous morning, but I'm doing well, and I've got some fun facts and fun theories to share with all the folks out there today.
Ooh, good. So we've got a lot to get to today. It is Wednesday. Mike Pettine had a lengthy holiday, long, I would call it, edition of his press conference today. So we are going to play that for you here kind of right out of the gate. We're going to pick the games. Now, the kid, fortunately for me, the Detroit Lions came through, so I only lost one game to you, so I still sit a 3 down with 2 weeks to go, so it certainly is possible. Wilhelm, though, dropped 2 to you, and he is falling away. Is that right? Or did he only lose one?
I thought he dropped 1 to me. And the world-famous Sasha Brown trying to be drawn into the studio, and he just shakes his head and walks away.
It's interesting. Sasha Brown, he likes to be the man behind the man, I would say, for Sasha Brown. I respect that.
He's just the man as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, indeed he is.
I think Wilhelm is 6 behind me. But
so he's 6 behind you then, and I'm 3 behind you with 2 weeks in the playoffs to go.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
That was a big week. I thought I was going to win all 3 against you this week, to be perfectly honest.
I didn't feel good going in, but then once it started going in my fashion, I started looking at some more menus.
Where would we go if you win? Have you decided?
I'm thinking that we're probably going to be looking at going down south a little bit to Mr. Ken Stewart's.
Oh, the original. The one all the way out in Akron.
Oh yeah, the other one's closed, by the way.
If you win, would you secure us a driver?
I'll secure the driver, absolutely.
If you win, it might be worth it to let you win then.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I'd like to give a shout-out to my guy Pierce, who is a daily listener to Cleveland Browns Daily. And he told me that you were promoing me coming on. I didn't hear the show yesterday. He told me you were promoing the show. So I'd like to give a shout-out to my guy Pierce.
Nice. Pierce, thanks for listening, brother. We certainly appreciate it. So, Kit, I saw last night, the night before, and it needs to be added to everybody's holiday movie repertoire. It is that good. Seth Rogen, phenomenal in his performance.
He's one of my favorites. I really enjoy Seth Rogen for many reasons.
And he delivers everything you would want from Seth Rogen. It's got a little bit, there's a tinge of Pineapple Express to the movie. There is a tinge of A Christmas Carol. There's a tinge of all the great holiday themes. And also just fun and themes as well. It gets good.
I heard him on Howard Stern recently talking about it, and it just sounded like this is just his kind of movie.
And two of the best cameos you'll see in a movie in a long, long time. One by James Franco, who is
his boy.
They're boys, and it's apparent they are on pace to be more than boys in this movie. And then Miley Cyrus comes in with a tremendous cameo as well.
Oh, I can't wait.
She came in like a wrecking ball, you might say.
I may have to go see that movie tonight.
You should.
There's a lot of movies I want to see. I want to see Creed.
Yes.
I want to see this. There's a movie.
Star Wars?
Star Wars I'll get to. There's a movie about the stock market that looked a little bit interesting.
Oh, the one with Steve Carell?
Yeah, I saw the billboard on the
short,
way in.
Something.
Yeah,
the short.
Something. The Big Short.
The Big Short. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it's a good time for cinema. Concussion, are you going to see Concussion?
Oh, Concussion's another one I'll see.
I'm going to see it because I feel like I need to see it, but I don't want to see it.
Well, I'm torn because I don't care what they say, I'm still going to want to watch football.
And it's based on a true story, so it's not.
I heard an interview with the guy that did the movie. The only reason it's based on a true story and not a true story, very small details, and he said, there was one thing where they said, well, Andre Waters never saw Dave Duerson in the street. Like, that didn't happen. So the real story is that Andre Waters had written letters to Dave Duerson, and when Dave Duerson turned him down, that's when Andre Waters committed suicide. All the facts, and he said, listen, if the facts weren't real, don't you think the NFL would be stepping up right now and commenting and saying, this isn't true, this isn't true? It's all true.
Do you think Christmas is an odd time to release that kind of a movie?
They need to have it for the Jews need something to see on Christmas Day.
They got Chinese food to go eat.
Well, I'll be eating some Chinese food. Had to get a 4:30 reservation at the Chinese restaurant. That was the
at Hunan by the Falls?
Hunan by the Falls, yes.
4:30.
4:30, it's crazy.
Do you think you can get takeout from them on Christmas Day, or do you think they're getting, like, too overwhelmed?
I think if you call ahead of time, you know, I've got some connections there, so if you need some takeout, I may be able to arrange
it. Well, I hope to be having a good Christmas meal at Christmas. I don't know what I'm doing on Christmas yet. It has not yet been decided.
Yeah,
we'll see.
4:30 just seems like an awful early time to eat dinner, but
it seems like a very, very early time to eat dinner. All right, we're going to talk about the hot topics today. What about the biggest snub in the history of the Pro Bowl, maybe Gary Barnage, Big Play Gare? I also think Allen Robinson was
the
an
Pro Bowl
egregious
is a joke.
It's
I'll
a joke.
It, I'll say it out loud. It's I'll say joke. It all day. It's a joke. And pointed out to me, between New England and Carolina, there was one All-Pro Pro Bowl offensive lineman. They're the two best teams in the league. That either shows you one thing. Linemen don't matter, or the people voting don't know what they're doing.
I think that on some level, a part of it is that linemen don't matter that much. Let's look at the offensive linemen that made the Pro Bowl. When you look at some of the teams on you know that got those linemen in, you said one each for Carolina and New England, right? You got the Cowboys, the 49ers. The Cowboys got two, Tyron Smith and Travis Frederick. So I think they got three. They got Zach Martin. So the Cowboys got three. They're in no danger of making the playoffs. The 49ers with Joe Staley, no danger of making the playoffs. On the other side, you've got Marshall Yanda from the Ravens, Mike Pouncey from the Dolphins, Mac from the Browns.
Mac made the Pro Bowl?
Alex Mack made the Pro Bowl.
Oh, my.
Alex Mack made the Pro Bowl, which was a little bit surprising. But Allen Robinson doesn't make it, and Calvin Johnson does. That's ridiculous. Larry Fitzgerald shouldn't have made the Pro Bowl. You know, you have him on your fantasy team. He's disappeared over the last 5 weeks.
Yeah, no, and Calvin's been terrible.
And Allen Robinson, all he does is have 13 touchdowns, 100 yards or a touchdown in 10 straight games.
Let me answer my critics real quickly. Someone said something on Twitter saying that 4:30, come on, the Cavs are on at 5. I am debating seeing if I could get the pass because of that and not go. But the other thing I might do is just DVR the game. And as you know, Chinese restaurants get you in and they get you out. So I'm thinking a 4:30 meal gets me out of there at about 5:07.
No, it's not. No,
they,
it's not.
They want to turn that table 16 times that night. They got to turn that table. That's a small restaurant. They don't want to be making small talk. Chicken and rice, thank you very much. Chicken and vegetables, thank you very much. Fried rice, let's go.
Do you get any pot stickers, some steamed dumplings that are delicious?
I'm just going to be looking to get out of there as quickly as possible.
All right, well, speaking of getting out of there as quickly as possible, that's what we're going to do. We'll talk Pro Bowl, biggest snub. What did you guys think? The fact that Big Play Gare doesn't make it and Travis Kelce does, I think that there should be some type of restitution and retribution this Sunday in Kansas City. I think it's ridiculous. I think it's egregious. I've shared my thoughts with many people around the National Football League, including Big Play Gare himself. I told him I thought he was jobbed. Ridiculous. So we'll do that. By the way, the kid quickly, Mike Pettine yesterday on the Mike Pettine Coach Show saying, Die Hard, not a Christmas movie. Your thoughts on that?
I'm not really a huge Die Hard fan.
It is a Christmas movie, though.
I'd have to see it again and refresh my memory. I don't really remember.
Unbelievable.
Much.
Well, you let us know if you think it is a Christmas movie. When we come back, we're going to hear from the head coach, pardon me, of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine, on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Zagura, and Akil.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Let's go to the podium now and hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine.
Okay, I just want to begin by recognizing Alex Mack, Joe Thomas, for their selections to the Pro Bowl. Certainly, as we all know, that's an individual honor, but certainly this football's team first, and these guys both epitomize a team first mentality, and I don't know if we could have two better guys represent the Browns. I know for Alex this is his third, and Joe, it's just, you know, as I joked last year that they should rename the game, you know, Joe Thomas and Friends Pro Bowl, but to that accomplishment, when you sit back and look at it, you know, nine in 9 years is pretty special. And he's done so much for the team, so much for the organization. Just a model of consistency. You know, leads by example, and has that leadership trait that he makes people around him better. And then going back to Alex, it's just great to see him recognize just what he had, what he went through to get back. And I know he started the year slow, and but he's been playing his best football over the last his last several weeks, and you know it's a statement to his you know, to his perseverance, how hard he worked, and it's again good to see. You know, for Gary, for Travis, for Batty, to be recognized, you know, at the alternates, I think that's great to see too. You know, hopefully that these are all guys that find a way to Hawaii. Would certainly be well deserved. You know, three more good examples of guys that put the team above themselves. From a game standpoint, no hiding from it. You know, it's another difficult challenge. You know, it's very similar script to last week. We're going to go on the road to a tough environment, playing a team that's on a roll. I guess now they've won 8 in a row, fighting for a playoff spot. Very difficult place to play, especially late in the year. But it's a challenge that we look forward to. We're going to, you know, have a good couple days of prep. You know, and go out there, step up to the plate, and take a big swing at it. On the injury front, well, I'll finish talking about them. Kansas City's offense, very efficient. I think it starts with the quarterback, that he's not turning the ball over. You know, that he's more likely to take a sack than he is to force a throw. But he does a really good job for them, going where the ball, you know, knowing where it needs to go, and getting the ball there. Their run game, I think what they do schematically, a lot of the zone read stuff. So it still falls back to Seattle. There's some parallels there. Travis Kelce just named to the Pro Bowl, and that's well deserved. He's playing at an extremely high level. He's their go-to guy. Defensively, you know, Tom Bahali seems to be ageless. You know, still plays with an extremely high motor, very passionate. You can see loves football, and it shows up in how he plays. Dontari Poe is a force inside, gets good push, can be very disruptive to a run game. He's a better pass rusher than people give him credit for. And on the back end, you know, it's hard to overlook Eric Berry, who's, you know, what he's overcome to come back this year and play. And it was great to see him recognized yesterday as well with his nod to the Pro Bowl. You know, teams wise, they do a good job. You know, this is Tabe's mentor he's going against. So I know this is a big week for us on teams as well. On the injury front, we will have some guys miss today. Duke will be limited somewhat with a hamstring. I'm not sure how many reps he'll get, but Alex Mack, Joe Thomas, you know, Alex has a calf, and Joe Thomas, the knee, will not work today, but hopefully we'll get them back in some form or fashion tomorrow. Glenn Winston is still in the protocol, and then we'll be a little bit, you know, wide receiver wise, or Taylor Gabriel will miss today. He's dealing with a personal issue, family related, as is Isaiah Crowell. So those guys will be back later in the week, but they will not be here today. But they've been excused from practice. I'll go ahead and open it up.
So where do you rank Alex Smith?
Oh, I'm not going there. No, he's when you look at why they have won 8 in a row, I think that's the easy answer when you look at it. He is playing at a very high level. I think Andy Reid does an outstanding job of matching what he has talent-wise to the scheme. Takes advantage of what his guys do, and Alex was a mobile quarterback coming out, and he hasn't lost that through his NFL career. and they're doing a lot of good things that put him on the run and stress the defense.
Is he an example then, Mike, of how you don't give up on a quarterback? I mean, he was nothing like this, it seemed, in San Francisco. Otherwise, they probably
could. Well, I think it just falls back to what we've talked about before, that if you can see it in the quarter, if he's capable of doing it, and you surround him with the right people and the right scheme, then that's how you judge it. I mean, a quarterback is only going to be as good as his supporting cast, and you also have to make sure that you're allowing him to do things that he can do, that he's good, that he can excel at. You know, if a guy's not a pocket passer, don't let him be one. If he's not a sprint out guy, don't put him on the move. But get a guy, when a guy is comfortable in what he's doing and he's confident in it, then you can see him. But no, he's a good example, and I think it proves the point too that sometimes you when a quarterback's not successful, a lot of times he gets too much of the blame, and when he is successful, sometimes he gets too much of the credit. I mean, he's only one. I mean, it's a big part. I mean, I wouldn't say it's exactly 1/11th, but there are 10 other guys out there that his success or failure depends on.
Selections at tight end, and just, I know we've talked about it a bunch of times, but just how surprising his
I've said this before, it's not surprising to the people that know him, just because we saw glimpses of it a year ago, when he was the second, or when Jordan was out. But as far as ranking him with those other guys, I'm not going to go there, but did Gary Barnage play at a Pro Bowl level this year? Absolutely. And that's why we're hopefully he can find a way into the game.
Sort of a skinny on Mac, you know, conventional wisdom was that he started slow this year. How has he been at a – just talk about his level since last
year. He's improved. He has improved. He was not anywhere – I mean, that injury, it occurred, what, middle of the year last year, and there was – it was more than just a broken ankle. I mean, there was some – it was ligament damage. I mean, there was a lot for him to overcome, and we all see in the spring it was even a matter of, you know, I always talked about some of those guys that practice so hard you got to save them from themselves a little bit, and he had a tough time with that because he wants to go full speed all the time, and there's no substitute for time with that, and I think it's a lot of times with those injuries, whether it's a knee or something that where it was that devastating of an injury, that I think that the body part, whatever it is, gets to the point where structurally it's fine, but it's so much more the mental, the ability to trust it. I think we all saw that with Travis, just to stick the foot in the ground and make a cut where it's more of a mental block than it is a physical. And I think Alex, like anybody else going through, having gone through that, went through the same thing, and he's gotten to the point where, and you can ask him this, but it appears to us he's much more confident in it than he was earlier in the year.
Is he at the level now that he was at the beginning of last year?
Yeah, I don't know if you can make that statement. I just know he's improved significantly from the start of the season, and he's back now. And if you just look at his last month, he is playing at a high level.
Last follow-up real quick. One could surmise that this would help a free agent's bargaining position to make the Pro Bowl. Do you think at all about his possibility he could opt out of his contract?
He could. That's we don't have much control over that. However, that's his personal decision, and you know that it's in his favor that he has that in his contract, and we'll react accordingly. I mean, Alex Mack's a Cleveland Brown. We'd love to have him here and be a part of what we're doing, but that's that's a decision that'll be made down the road.
How would you respond to a Hall of Fame left tackle, a Pro Bowl center? The other parts aren't that bad either. So given the ranking of the team's running game, how would you just answer that? Why is the running game in the 30s?
Oh, I think that's a function of a lot of things. That this year was a different year. I think it took us a while to figure out who we were from a staff standpoint, figuring out where we were schematically. You know, having to make the change at offensive line coach was something that was difficult to overcome. We all know what transpired there. But it's the running game's not just a function of the offensive line, and I've said that all along. It's the tight ends, it's the receivers blocking, it's the backs making the right reads. You know, we went against, who's who in the top 10 in the NFL. We've gone against some pretty good fronts, and there were games we went into saying running the ball will be an afterthought, that we need to throw it first to set up the run. But we've had some recent success, and that's been good to see. Hopefully we have two more weeks to continue it.
Danny Shelton, season high in tackles against Seattle. What did you see from him? Would you say it's his best game that he's had this year?
I'd say it's up there. I don't know if I can definitively say that was his best one, but he's another guy who is – sometimes you see rookies that kind of play well early and then it starts to drop off the proverbial rookie wall. That's not the case with Danny, that he's doing a good job. He's getting better. I think he's learning. You know, as I've said all along, there's no substitute for live game reps. That he's played a good amount of snaps, and he's getting to experience against some veteran offensive linemen and learn the tricks of the trade. And I think he's been able to start to apply them on the field, and he's got a much better understanding of what we're trying to do. And then even more so what the other team's trying to do. What do backfield sets mean? What do line splits mean? Are we doing a good job gathering pre-snap information, line calls? If they make a certain call, does that mean run or pass? Being able to apply that and all that stuff that we talk about, instead of just lining up and playing, being able to process information pre-snap and use it without overloading yourself and slowing it down. He's done a good job with it. Now, you throw in those other two rookies that I think have followed a similar course, that they're playing well of late, is Xavier Cooper and Nate Orchard.
Would you rather it that way, that they, obviously, of course, I would rather them probably get better as the season goes on. Is that something that's come with his confidence, or because he's been pretty hard on himself this season?
Oh, and you want guys that are like that. He didn't walk in here thinking he had the NFL all figured out and knew that there was a learning curve that he was going to be on. No, and that's – you want all your guys, as they log more game experience, that they have the ability to use it moving forward and tuck those coachable, those teaching moments away and be able to apply them and not be, as I always like to say, a repeat offender from a mistake standpoint. Hey, that guy got – they got me on that one time. That's not going to happen again.
Hey, Mike – Taylor Gabriel's yards per catch average is about 10 yards less, I think, than it was last year. What is the reason for that?
I'm not sure. That's a function of a lot of things. Some of it's schematic. Some of the routes that maybe Kyle had him running last year aren't necessarily some of the ones that we have him running. So, and then he's missed some time. But I don't get caught too much up in the numbers. Is it, we call a play, he needs to know where to line up. He needs to know what his job is. I think last year that he snuck up on some teams and hit some big plays, and people are a little bit more aware of who he is and what he's capable of. But I don't see it as, hey, his plays has dropped off. He gets a lot of pluses on the grade sheet, and that's all we can ask. Go out and do your job.
Like you talked about Alex Smith protecting the ball. Where do you think Johnny's growth is in that department, and then how important will it be against the Chiefs defense that turned over?
Well, it was unfortunate, the fumble that he had in the Seattle game, because there were a couple instances when he was in traffic in that game where he did a much better job of securing the football. That if you go, Kevin made the point in the coaches' meeting that if that had been the Jets game, just a marked difference in his ball security, and you have to have that in this league. You turn the ball over as a quarterback, that's going to be the death knell for a game. You just can't do it. He's you could tell he's made a conscious effort. Just having better awareness. There's been a couple examples of him getting out of the pocket where he's peeked behind him, where early in the year he got caught. I forget what game it was, but a guy got him from behind and the ball came out. So I just think he has a better sense of, I can go ahead and get out, but I have to make sure that where are my nearest threats.
Does it bother week he's put the ball on his left hand a couple times when he's scrambling out of the pocket. Does that bother you at all?
As long as he doesn't lose it, and as long as he's not trying to throw it left-handed, unless he's trying to just find a way to get rid of it. But no, we want the ball secure. I know there's some times where you're going to your left and you feel you got a threat coming to your right, that if you got to get the ball. But it's the one thing he does have strong hands. But no, we want all of our quarterbacks to have great ball security. He's the type of player, and I was around Ogden in Baltimore for a long time, that sometimes you get to the point where you just feel like you're banging your head into a stump. So you try to minimize his. Do you put your best pass rusher over there in the event that he's going to get canceled by that guy? Sometimes you just put a guy over there to have him occupy Joe. He's one of those tackles. And you try to find you're always looking for the mismatch. It's not often that you would look at our lineup offensive line wise and say we have a big advantage of our pass rusher versus Joe. So you always try to find, you know, see how when you're evaluating offensive linemen, you'll make a cut up of the tapes when defensive linemen ran games against them. What games do they have issues with? And Joe's seen it all. I mean, whether it's the end going first, the tackle going, I mean, all those games, he's seen them all. So it's very difficult to scheme against it. You're almost better off saying, hey, Lay, let that one for – we'll trade one for one over there. Let's see if we can find a better matchup somewhere else.
Michael, over the last two weeks, guys have come out and supported you and really said that, you know, they want you and coaching staff to come back, you know, especially even Johnny Manziel, who you had to bench – this year. So what does it mean to you that team leaders such as Joe Thomas, Gary Barnes, Johnny Manziel, Dante Whitner come out with that kind of support?
It's good to hear, but I mean, we're, you know, as a coaching staff, you hope that you're running a program that the players enjoy being in and they respect the men that they work for, and when you hear comments like that reinforces that. But at the same time, we all know that you know, this, I've said it a million times, is a bottom line business, pass or fail. And unfortunately we've failed more than we've passed. We also feel that we've planted some seeds for growth here, but as I stress to the players all the time, control the controllables. And for us as a coaching staff, it's, we're going to prepare like heck to get our team ready for Kansas City and next week for Pittsburgh, and we're going to coach our butts off, and hopefully we can get our guys the same, preparing hard, practicing hard, playing hard. And then, as I said before, whatever happens, happens. But, you know, to answer your question, I mean, it's good to hear, but it's still, you know, we're still pressing forward for two more weeks. Well, no. I think it just reinforces what I've said all along from a personal standpoint. I mean, he and I get along very well. I mean, if you just eliminate that incident where it was, you know, I felt like, you know, I was doing my job and doing what was best for the team and doing what was best for him. And I think it, you know, hopefully he respects that. But I also know that from an interaction standpoint, that, you know, when he's here, I have a ton of respect for him because of A, what he's gone through personally, and B, how he has earned the respect of the guys around him. We all know what he did, but at the same time, the player, when you hear the other players come out and support him, because they see it, they see him ultra prepared, they see him seamlessly calling plays in the huddle and getting guys lined up and knowing where to go with the ball and doing his job. That's there's no substitute for hard work to get to that point. And he's put it in. He's done it. So from a coaching staff standpoint, I mean, from there's the football trust is there. I mean, we all know about the hiccup, but the football trust is there. So it's not surprising. I mean, I've said it up here that he and I have a very good relationship. Kevin O'Connell, John DeFilippo, it's all very positive with the quarterback room. And would be surprised if that wasn't a two-way street.
Mike, when Joe Hayden went on IR, we got a statement from him saying that, you know, specialists think that he's going to be able to return. And Hawkins, he didn't get anything. So do you have any sense what the outlook on his future is?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a tricky subject, and any time you have a concussion that lingers for as long as Joe's did and Hawks did, that you're going to be ultra cautious with it. And I know, you know, Hawk sought out a second opinion, as he should, and I know he'll get reevaluated in a period of time. Want him to take a little bit more time, then go back. I won't go into the details, but hopefully at some point that we can make that same statement with Hawk. But it's just nothing that you ever want to risk. Or I mean, we'll always take the very conservative route, as we should, with situations like this. And it was great news with Joe to hear that, because I know it's 2015's been a struggle for him, and it's tough for him to come in this building and know, as I said before, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected, and for him to be penciled in to have such a prominent role. And then have the season not go the way that he wanted it to go, and have that sense of, I want to be out there, and I feel like I'm letting people down, and he can't be. It's been frustrating, but I don't think anyone's more frustrated than those two guys, because they both see themselves, they're both competitors, and they both want to be out there.
That was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. You can tweet your mailbag questions in at Nathan Zagura, at TheKid97, at Browns_daily. A lot to cover. Pro Bowl snubs. We'll talk about that. We've got game picks to make. A whole lot to get to here on CBD on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, Nathan Zagura, and of course, the Kid with you here in Berea. And of course, we've got a lot to get to still. We've got the holiday version of the forecast. We've got the NFL game predictions. We got the mailbag. We got your phone calls. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. And we'll go to those phone lines right now. We got Tom in California. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. You know, I think if you plot out the demise of the Rex Ryan system, it happens to cross the line of the CBA. So you guys were talking about missed tackles and bad angles, and I think Matt was talking about the fact that you have all of these different alignments and different personnel. I think that the reason that you can't do that is you're playing essentially more of your base package, like you mentioned with Seattle, or some of the 4-3 guys that have a specific gap responsibility. Then when you do those walkthroughs, those gaps and angles don't change. If you have, you know, the flavor of the play, which we have 9,000 of them, and you're trying to do that in walkthrough, somebody comes in and that angle you saw in walkthrough becomes completely different in the speed of the game when you're at full game speed. I wanted to get your take on that, because I think that's the problem. It's not necessarily that the corners can't do this and that. I think it's that they can't actually practice and hit each other and get those angles right. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think you bring up an interesting point, but I don't think it's just a question of missed tackles. I think it's, you know, when we need to be in a blitz, we're not. When we shouldn't be in a blitz, we are. I just think the scheme just doesn't work. I mean, I don't think it's just missed tackles. It's clear as day.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at Buffalo went from a top five defense to like the 20th defense. New Orleans, Rob Ryan got fired. They were so bad. And obviously here, we have the highest paid defense in the league, and we're committing, and we're ranked, I think, 32nd. You know, it's not only because of missed tackles.
I agree with that. But if you're doing everything is read and react, okay? My point is that I think Matt said everything was read and react, right?
Yep.
So instead of so now the linebacker is reacting to what the nose, what gap the nose tackle takes, or what tackle, what the other defensive tackle, the end take. And therefore, because you're reacting to this at game speed, the you can't, if you can't practice that at game speed, how can you play that with a read and react system at game speed? I think it's because they can't actually practice correctly. So it's not just missed tackles, although we had 10 in Seattle, but we're talking about bad angles and people not being in the right place and people blown by the safety or whatever because somebody was supposed to be in a particular place and they weren't. And I think it's more the CBA as well. At least I think that's a big contributing factor.
In terms of not being able to tackle, et cetera, maybe. But I think that there's also, based on just every people that I've talked to and talking to Matt, you know, when you have defenses that have gap assignments, it's a lot easier to know what your job is and to be in the right place than it is when you don't know what your gap assignment is. And as you said, you're reading and reacting. So I think that that's a part of it. I also think that there's another part of it where the rule changes for wide receivers and in favor of the passing games has certainly changed the ability to play, you know, press man all over the field. I don't think that it's just as easy as it once was to do that. Do you agree with that, the kid?
Well, I think that the refs don't let you do it so much, but I don't know. Carolina does a lot of it and seems to work for them. I just think for whatever reason, this scheme, whatever it's assignments, there's a million ways you can look
at
it.
But Carolina's got its deficiencies too, because Carolina can't get to the quarterback. And that's why you've seen two massive comebacks on them from Green Bay and the Giants, who have made things very interesting by just spreading it out and throwing the ball all over the yard.
Yeah, they do have deficiencies, but their corners and their DBs do play super aggressive, and they seem to be – I mean, they may not be the best defense in the league, but they're certainly – you know, they're a top-10 defense.
Yes, indeed. All right. Let's go now to Ed in Akron. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. You guys do a really nice job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm really surprised, actually, and this isn't why I called, but even on Jim Donovan's show with Tony Grossi on Monday nights and that, and Jim really went off this week. I think the one thing the Browns do correctly is they let their people that they pay talk accurately about their team, even though it's pretty harsh. So kudos for them for that.
Yep.
Unfortunately,
there's not. I mean, you can only. And I listen. I'm here in the building. I'm a Browns employee. I love this team and want them to be successful. But at the same time, you can only be, you know, you can only tell the truth about what's going on.
I know.
And at times, the picture is not very pretty. Unfortunately.
I know. I'm not so sure other teams would allow it, and people don't realize it. But you got to walk out that door into those hallways too.
I do.
So I that's why I give you guys such credit.
Well, thank you.
You know what you're talking about. I think we all agree that Ray should be gone, so I'll go to the part about Mike Pettine. My problem with him is that he is stuck to this defense, which, like you've talked about, you know, you think it's kind of in path by. But let's say it's not. You still need to have elite corners and really an elite defensive backfield.
Mm-hmm.
And even when we didn't have that because of injury, they still insisted on running that press man, and I don't know how many times we got deep for huge plays, touchdowns, and they did it all the way up and up until the bye week. And slowly over time, did they finally maybe get Shelton off the nose and put four people down?
Yep.
On the line and were willing to try something new? That's what concerns me about that he doesn't maximize the talent that he has. You also need speedy linebackers in the 3-4, and we don't have that either. So that disturbs me.
Yeah, and you need to have those great 3-4 outside linebackers that can rush the passer. I mean, one of the reasons Kansas City's so successful is they've got Tamba Ali, Justin Houston, and now Dee Ford, who they drafted in the first round a year ago to be that edge rusher, has stepped in and done an excellent job with that as well.
Absolutely. And I don't know if anybody noticed, but I think it was after the San Francisco game. They said, how did you end up, you know, running so well? Well, a lot of that was San Francisco.
Yes.
But he also mentioned that they changed the way they were blocking.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, It took you, what, 11 games to figure that out? I mean, you just, they don't adjust quickly enough. You know, even a simple thing like always taking the ball in the second half. Wouldn't you think if you lost 7 or 8 games in a row, you might just for the hell of it try something different and take the ball? I know that's not a big thing, but that just shows he's locked in on this is how we do it.
That one I don't have a problem with because I think statistically it's been shown it is better to defer because then you can get that double dip at the end of the first half and the start of the second half, which the Patriots do better than any team in the NFL. And as you saw in the Seattle game when they were able to get that field goal late, then they got the ball again. They had an opportunity to double down on that. So that one I don't have as much of a problem with, but I do think that, yeah, you got to be able to identify what's not working. You got to identify where there's room to fix and room to grow and upside, et cetera, because I think that is something that has not been done as effectively in terms of making adjustments. And I think you've seen that on the defense side of the ball. I think the thing that's amazing is, I don't know what's more amazing, that this team has 12 sacks in 12 games or that it has 16 sacks in 2 games. Because that's what it is. You had 16 sacks against Tennessee and San Francisco, and in the other 12 games, you only have 12 sacks combined.
That's crazy. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you had 7 against Tennessee in week 2, and then you had 9 against San Francisco, and in the other games of the whole year, you have 12 total. So it hasn't been consistent, and it goes kind of what Mike Pence saying about consistency and this team not quite being consistent, et cetera. But it's been one of those things that they certainly have struggled with on a daily basis or on a week-to-week basis, maintaining that pass rush, doing whatever they need to do to get it done. It's been a very, you know, inconsistent thing, and I don't think you can play a lot of man-to-man coverage without a pass rush, number one. Number two, I would also say that with all the different packages that you run, with all the different shuffling in and out of the lineup of people here and there and whatever, I've talked to some of the players on this defense who say it's real hard because you're not, you know, we talked about Seattle. They play basically their same back 7 or back 6 every single snap. Those guys work together in coverage every single snap. The linebackers and the DBs, they know exactly what they're doing every single play. They kind of get into the rhythm. They know what they're supposed to do. The Browns don't have that. And talking to some of the guys in the defense backfield, you know, they said, we just don't have the communication. We're blowing assignments every single play because we're not getting that. And every play, you know, you don't even have time to talk to the person after the play about what happened because they're shuffled out and we're getting this package to get the best matchup. And talking to people who have been on good defenses don't do that. Good defenses have their guys and they play their guys.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, I've been critical of the defensive coaching also, but I think that's a little bit, you know, if they left the same players out there, people would say, well, why aren't you trying something different? I mean,
if it wasn't working, I just think you need to have some level of continuity.
All right, well, nothing was working, so they're shuffling people in and out.
It doesn't seem like anybody plays. No, but we're not shuffling them in and out because it's not working. We're shuffling them in and out because we play sub packages every single play to try to get the best matchups every single play.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point the defense has to be completely blown up and started from scratch.
Would you go to a 4-3?
I don't know enough about the differences. I don't know enough about our talent level. It depends who was in charge of the defense and what they, you know, they saw the talent wise. I think that it certainly can't be running this scheme that we're running now. I mean, even if it's a 3-4, still let's run a different type of 3-4. Then let's take a look at what Pittsburgh's done for 25 years. And
we had that with Ray Horton. That didn't work either.
Well, and maybe part of it is, you know, is the personnel as well, because Pittsburgh does not, I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Pittsburgh has awful defensive backs, and yet they still find ways to get pressure on and still, you know, like the other day against Denver. Defense gets torched in the first half, and then somehow in the second half they shut them down, and their defense gets them the ball back every single time. I don't know what the difference is, but what I would be doing is watching the teams that are successful and copying them. Looking at what's New England doing? What's Seattle doing?
More of a 4-3 this year.
What's Arizona doing? What's Pittsburgh doing? What are all these teams doing? I mean, what we're doing isn't working. And if these, you know, depending on the situation, I think the staff has to take a look in the mirror and say, listen, what we're doing is not working. Let's put our egos aside and pretend that, you know, let's try something different because our system doesn't work. And I'm sure there's a lot of it that these guys all think that they're smart. And they all have been successful throughout, and maybe there's something to the, you know, they think that in their minds it's the players not performing their system or what. But
I think it's clear as day that the defensive system is just not going
to
work.
It's not working. All right, let's go to Kevin in Parma Heights now. Kevin, welcome to the show.
What's up, man? How you guys
doing? Good.
Good. I know it's December and all, and you probably don't want to hear this, but I'm going to talk about the draft for a second. Probably going to be in the top three picks. With no quarterback worth taking, and we don't need a tackle, and probably a receiver in the draft can't go that high. I mean, what really do you think we should do? You think trading back is the best option?
I think that always trading back is a good option. It's not anything that has worked out for the Browns in the past, but it still is the right thing to do. So I would be okay with that. I would love Laquon Treadwell getting another big wide receiver, a big weapon. And I bet you could probably slide back in the first round and get another asset and do it. Now, if the Browns end up with the second pick in the draft, okay, this year with Tennessee, the Browns will actually end up with two first rounders. They will end up with the number two pick, and they will end up with the number 32 pick, because the way that the NFL tiebreakers work is if it's a tie like it would be for the Browns and the Titans get it in the first round, the Browns would get the first pick of the second round. So the Browns would actually have pick one and pick 32, because you remember this year New England doesn't have a first-round pick.
Right, but there still would be the break between
– it would count as a second round, but it would be one of the first 32 players taken.
Right, but I think it
– I think that you could move back, though, and get to a point where you have three of the first 32 – because remember, even in that draft where you traded back to Sammy Watkins' draft, you trade back, you could have taken Odell Beckham there. So I do think you could get a receiver like Laquon Treadwell there.
I love trading down. I love accumulating assets, but you just got to hit. I mean, there's
got to hit.
There's never been a more important draft.
But just because it's been wrong, they haven't hit in the past doesn't mean it isn't.
And, people say, oh, Atlanta won the Julio Jones trade. People always want to say, they killed the Browns in that trade. Really? Look at their roster. They've had Julio Jones, one of the top five receivers in the league, and here comes another year. They're not going to make the playoffs. That trade was a lose-lose for both teams. In fact, on paper, it still was a win for the Browns. It's just we drafted horribly.
Right. They just didn't take advantage of
the old. I mean, yeah. Imagine if we took Odell Beckham
instead of Gilbert,
and then Teddy
or Carr.
Although the bloom a little bit off Carr. Carr has not been very good the last month.
No, I think Teddy is much better than Carr.
So the trade was right. It's just the executions of the picks were not right.
Yes, correct. But I do think it is still the right thing to do.
Absolutely, it was the right thing to do, and you got to continue to do the right thing, unless the caveat is if there's a quarterback that whoever is making the pick, whether it's Ray Farmer or somebody new, thinks that one of these quarterbacks is a can't-miss guy. And even if you think, and I like what Johnny's been doing the last 2 weeks, even if you think that Johnny can make it, there's nothing wrong with having two good quarterbacks. Put yourself in a position to have an asset, that you could trade for somebody.
Right. And it's interesting talking about Johnny Manziel. We'll talk about this when we come back. But John Clayton today saying that he believes Johnny Manziel will be traded in the offseason.
I heard that, and it was
to Dallas for a fifth or a sixth.
It was very quick. He does this segment on the Lebatard show where they fire questions at him as fast as humanly possible, and he answered it in like a split second. It wasn't like he sat there and thought it out. I'm not saying he doesn't believe it, but it wasn't like it was like a long conversation they were having about that. It was just boom.
He still thought it. He still said it.
I know he did, but I'm just giving you a little context.
So he said it quickly.
Said it quickly, and that Stugatz and the crew are firing questions at him at 100 miles an hour. Like, that's the segment.
What was the question? Will Johnny Manziel be traded?
Where will Johnny Manziel be next year?
So he could have said Cleveland.
He could have. You're right. I don't think Johnny Manziel will be traded for a fifth-round pick. I think that there's a little bit of ego involved, and if it's not a three, I don't think the Browns are going to trade him. At what point, what are you going to – a fifth or a sixth? I mean, what's the average fifth or sixth? You need a backup quarterback anyways. May as well keep him and see if, maybe he beats somebody out. Maybe he's your backup. You can't trade him for a fifth or a sixth. A third, fine. A fourth, maybe. Not a fifth or a sixth.
I just don't see it happening. All right. When we come back, hour number two, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We'll get into our game picks for the week. We'll take some more phone calls, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.